Welcome to Integrate This, your go-to EdTech podcast where curiosity meets classroom innovation. Join your hosts, David Berner and Jeremy Mikla, as we explore the rapidly evolving world of educational technology. From game-changing tools to insightful conversations with today's top EdTech voices, we're here to help educators stay informed, inspired, and ready to innovate. So tune in, level up, and let's integrate this. Hey, welcome back to the Integrate This EdTech podcast. Today, we're joined by Dr. Alfonso Fons Mendoza Jr., the founder and host of My EdTech Life. For the past 4 years, he's interviewed educators, researchers, and EdTech innovators to spark meaningful conversations about where teaching and technology meet. With more than 18 years of experience as a teacher, instructional technologist, and now a district testing coordinator, Fons brings a thoughtful, down-to-earth perspective on using technology in ways that are practical, ethical, and truly supportive of teachers and students. So Fons, we're very happy to have you here. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the invite, and it's just great to be here and just to be able to just chat and chat education, chat technology with you both. And I'm just excited about this conversation. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you start by telling us kind of the story of how you moved into these different roles that you have, you know, teaching to instructional software specialist, to digital learning coordinator, assessment coordinator, and even getting in a little bit to My EdTech Life and how you established that?
Can you give us that picture? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that might be a whole other show, but I'll kind of keep it short, give you like the cliff note version. And I'm always going to start with this, and I'm always transparent. And I've said this on many shows. It's I never, ever, ever wanted to be in education. And, you know, and I fell into education, and I absolutely fell in love with everything about it. So just a little bit of a backstory is grew up only child here in the southernmost tip of Texas, right along the border, immigrant parents working hard, but working odd jobs. Dad worked outside in a citrus farm out in the scorching heat of South Texas. And my mom just being a seamstress or doing odd jobs, you know, just kind of growing up, seeing my parents really struggle, but struggle to do what's right for me and what's best for me and give me everything that I needed. But they always, always pushed for education. What really motivated me is they would always say, you need to work hard so you can work in air conditioning. That was their main goal. They just said, we just don't want you to be working like us. We want you to be in an office or work in air conditioning. And for them, that was kind of like their it. Well, you know, being an only child, it's like the pressure's still on. So I, you know, didn't learn English until I was in second grade. Then after that, graduated top 10% of my class here in our local high school. And that afforded me a lot of opportunities for education outside of high school. And so luckily, I did not have to pay any tuition based on scores because I received several grants and, of course, financial aid. I managed to get my bachelor's in business administration, which was my passion. I said, you know what? I want to go into business. I loved marketing. I love the salesmanship of it. I said, I want to make money. And obviously the end goal for any Hispanic kid is always like, I got to take care of my parents, you know, for everything that they've done for me. So did that for a couple of years, maybe about 2.5 years, and then fork in the road moment. My dad was fell ill, and being an only child, obviously a lot of responsibilities, trying to help around the house and help mom out and everything. And so the decision had to be made where I was like, well, due to my dad's condition, I really need to find a job that is going to afford me more time to be readily available for my dad should he need anything, and, you know, taking him to treatments or being readily available. And so I transitioned into education. Dad's okay, by the way. He will be 89 in 2 weeks. So, and he is fine. He is man, a little ball of energy. And I was like, man, if I can be like that at 89, like, I'd be so happy with as much energy as he's got. But going back to transitioning into education, a friend of mine said, hey, man, they're looking for math teachers. And based on your, you know, your marketing degree and your marketing courses, and you had to do a lot of math and finance and so on, you probably qualify to be a teacher on an emergency certificate or certification. So I call, gentleman answers. He's like, yeah, come in tomorrow for an interview. So I went in that next day. And as soon as I turned the corner, a big familiar face like just popped up. And it turned out that it was the husband of a high school business computer teacher that I had, who turned principal in that district. Well, my interview was 10 minutes. He said, come back tomorrow, fill out your paperwork. And that August, I started as an algebra teacher, ninth grade algebra teacher. And I was really doing the students that would take their state exam, and then they didn't pass it the first time, they kind of come through me, and then they would have to take that algebra class again to prep and so on. So did that for 3 years, transitioned into elementary for the following 8 years, where I feel that I really, really learned to teach, you know, really cut my teeth. And that's where I fell in love with the tech and amplifying student voices, things of that sort. And that's really where I just kind of built this passion up for educational technology, best practices. So did that for 8 years as a science, social studies, math teacher. And then I transitioned into a service center role, where I became the instructional software specialist / digital learning coordinator for about 8 years, where I was just in charge of providing professional development, you know, helping teachers with the platforms that we have available, and just really building capacity. And now, as I transitioned into a district assessment coordinator, that is kind of like a full circle of kind of putting things together. And I know assessment is a really dirty word that a lot of people don't like to hear. But believe it or not, in the role that I'm in now, seeing all that data and pulling all that data and seeing student work and things of that sort, you really get to learn a lot about your district. You get to learn a lot about your students. And now my goal is to see what I can do through my findings to help our students do better, and how to help our teachers do better, not necessarily as an I gotcha, but as a whole, to say like, hey, you know, if maybe we're all on this level playing field and making sure that we are all talking the same language straight across the district, how much more would that help our students be better? And, you know, still using the best practices from digital learning coordinator, instructional tech, to really build up our student capacity, build our teacher capacity in this new role. So yeah, that was a lot there, but I definitely try to condense it for sure.
I think one thing that I see is that a lot of instructional coaches, technology integrationists, you know, their districts are piling on other titles on top of theirs. So to hear you, and when I listen to them talk, they don't always see how when they get that, we call it a DAC, a district assessment coordinator, mm-hmm. That title gets thrown into their laps, that they don't necessarily like that they have to split those two different things. But it seems like you embrace that because you see it as a way that you can take the data that is coming from that position and use it in an effective way to improve mm-hmm. instruction.
Yeah. You know, and to be honest with you, I'll be fully transparent to simply transition into this role. This is only my third month in this role.
Yeah.
I believe there is such a thing as grief. And I was like, man, there was a lot of tech grief in the sense of, man, I'm not going to be able to be tech or going out to the campuses. And because that was my role, that was everything that I knew for those last 8 years, and being able to have the answers to everything because you already know how things are. So there was a lot of a grief there in the sense of going into something new, having to relearn things and not having all those answers. But you know what? I've embraced it, and it was rough at the very beginning. And I just want to share that because there may be other instructional coaches or soon to be instructional coaches that may be moving into roles at service centers, or we call them, well, the district office, or we call ours our service center, or that may be working at a region service center where you're going to kind of feel a little out of place because you may not have all the answers like you once did. Things are done differently than they once were. So it's just going back to learning how to improvise, adapt, and overcome. And that's been something that's been very helpful. But once you really kind of cut through all of that and then say, wow, like now I have this vision that I didn't have before. And now this makes sense, like everything that we've been doing. And now how can we tie these results to what is being done? And how can we tweak that to make this better for our teachers and make it better for our students? So yeah, it's mm-hmm. been very interesting, but it's been a great learning experience for sure.
Yeah, and I wanted to have you touch upon one other aspect too of something else you're involved in, which is EduAid. And so we had an opportunity to interview Thomas Hummel. Yeah. Hopefully we'll get the other Thomas on at some point, but EduAid is a platform that really focuses on students and is incorporating some of the AI elements that have come out and in comparison to some of the other AI tools. How did you get involved with EduAid and what do you find that's unique about that particular platform?
Yeah, you know what? One of the things that has helped tremendously, and I'm sure that if you both haven't seen it yet, you will soon as you continue to network and build and people see you as the content experts that you are. That's really what it was, you know, just having them on my podcast when nobody knew who they were and just kind of seeing like, hey, what's this platform? And now I'm curious. I want to learn more. I want to give them a voice and, you know, just tell their story. So pretty much it was just kind of that's the way it started. They were on my show. And then after that, they called me up and said, hey, man, we want to build a little board of advisors. We want people that are using, you know, thought leaders. We want people that have all sorts of different backgrounds to really help us out. And it's been great. Thomas Thompson and Thomas Hummel, T-Squared, I call them. They're fantastic, you know, and they've been great. And I think they have the record on my Tech Life for most appearances because one of the things that I love about them now, this is kind of going back to why I really love this platform is they are open and honest and transparent. Every single time, if you go back to some of my episodes that I've done with them, when it was just Thomas Hummel by himself, then I had Thomas Thompson was first, then Thomas Hummel, then I had both on, and then they both came on again and so on, is that they are not afraid to just openly speak about how their platform works. They're not afraid to tell people like, hey, this is kind of where we're working on right now and we're trying to make things better and we're listening. Thomas Hummel is still in the classroom, which is fantastic. He's a co-founder, but his thing is like, you know, I like being part of EduAid, but he really has a passion for teaching. Thomas Thompson is passionate about education, but obviously now he's taking on that role where he's in EduAid full-time. But to me, what I admire the most is the full open transparency and really the work that they do that maybe sometimes goes unannounced or unheard, how they really help and are helping a lot of educators overseas in Africa, a lot of educators where there may not be a lot of teachers and there is support that is needed, how they will just simply open up the platform and say, hey, here is a free account, just use it. And philanthropic. Yeah, there you go. You know, tongue-tied and everything here this morning. But that is one of the things that to me is so important about education and even in educational technology, that human contact, that human aspect, and the fact that they have not lost their ground. You know, their feet are still grounded and they are just all about the work, putting out a great product that is going to help teachers, but also help students. And they do it in, like I said, in such an open way that there's absolutely nothing that they hide. I mean, they're transparent about everything.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that after having Thomas Hummel on our show, is that he really pulled no punches. You know, he was so forthright, open, honest, and just like, nope, he was going to point out things that he didn't agree with that others maybe are doing. Yes. And suggesting, you know, why that is not a direction we should be going. And it was so like, it was just beautiful to have him on to hear him present that perspective.
Yeah. Isn't he great? I mean, that guy has such spicy takes. And sometimes I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, like, but you're a founder and like, this is what you do. And he, like you said, it's just, you know what? Yes, it is what I do, but does it mean that you have to agree with the way that everybody does it and things of that sort? No, I mean, you want to make sure you do it right. And like you said, that's one of the things too that I really appreciate about both Thomas Thompson and Thomas Hummel.
Right. So one of the things that you brought up here a little bit, or a couple of different things, I'm going to try to put them together here a little bit. You mentioned your podcast a couple of times, My EdTech Life. And you also talked about, you know, growing your professional learning network, right? So, you know, if you want to take it from the perspective of your podcast, how do you bring people on to help elevate those educator voices, right? And what can teachers do to help grow their professional learning networks? Because I think it's really important that educators keep connected with other educators, you know?
Yeah, I think that's something that's very important. So for myself, doing this for 5 years now, you know, started on April 10th of 2020, and we just turned 5 this year in April, 338 episodes. It'll be 339 after I finish this episode. I'm going to release another one. And to me, that has been the most important thing that... So let me kind of go back a little bit. So growing up, like I mentioned, being an only child, I really didn't have a lot of like friends in the area that I lived that were my age. It was really like school friends that I would go and visit. And of course, if they had siblings, they had large families. It was very interesting because I'd go to their houses that I get invited to like go play basketball or go play whatever. And I would just sit there and I would just listen to the adults talk. Because there's just something about that storytelling aspect and just hearing others' perspectives, the experience of others, that to me, since I was young, I remember just always sitting there and just being a listener, because I want to pick up on things. You pick up, you know, little details here, little details there, and then say, oh yeah, you know, I can kind of take that nugget and apply it here and so on. So going into podcasting, it was just kind of like a natural progression in that. And so I would find guests and bring them on. And I always am, since I'm on so much on social media, you know, particularly LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, and so pretty much everywhere, you know, as I scroll on, like I'll look at and see people that I'm like, hey, man, you know what? This person is doing something great. Or sometimes just based on a comment, on a simple comment that they put, I was like, ooh, that was a spicy take. I want to bring them on. And then I'll bring them on as guests. And so it's really just finding what resonates with me, what kind of hits with me, because I know if it hits with me, I know it's going to hit with somebody else. And maybe they may feel the same way, they may not. But you know what? Let's bring it to the conversation. And so for me, it's always been able to find that balance of, you know, you're going to have those that are all for something, those that may not be all for something. And I just kind of try and mediate and see where we can reconcile, you know, some of those things. But it's been very, very wonderful to build the professional learning network, because now, like, such as you both, you know, reaching out to me, now you're part of my network and I get to be part of your network. And hopefully in the future, maybe we'll do some more collaborating. And that's to me what it's all about too, is helping each other build each other's capacity to continue learning from one another, to not remain stagnant, and just to be able to continue to light that flame and that passion for education and what we do. So for all my educator friends that are out there, I always say, you know, your personal learning family, you know, is something that is going to be great for you to continue to fuel. And the fact that they can get you out of a bind in any situation to say like, hey, I've got a lesson on the Roman Empire, but this is the way I've always done it. Does anybody have, you know, a suggestion or a different way of doing this? And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, here's a slideshow of what I did, or hey, check this link out, that this is what I do and this is what I shared and these are these activities. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, you know, and that's what I love about the education community, that they are so giving and so willing to help, and or even just say, hey, you know what, let me get you on a Google Meet to meet in my class, and then they can do the teaching for you in that sense, because they become those experts in those situations. And, you know, I think that's so important, and especially now with the way that situations are, and we see it all in the news. But I'll be honest, you know, everything that you see on the news is not always going to be true, because there are some wonderful educators that are doing the work, and they're doing it so graciously and they're doing it well. Not every student is the way that maybe they're perceived on the news. Yes, you know, students will be students, but there are so many great educators that are going above and beyond to help all our students be successful. And of course, you've got admins too that are really trying their best to make everything the best that they can for our students and for our teachers as well. But it all starts also with not being afraid to ask for help. So professional learning networks, or like Dr. Sarah Thomas says, also professional learning families, those are something that you really should be part of, and that can really help.
So I really like that, because it's, you know, in a lot of the conversations that we have with AI, you can go to AI to help you with those things, but it's not the authentic human perspective, mm-hmm. from a colleague, from a coworker that is, you know, been a tried, tested and true method. Yes. You know, that you can go to that person, because you have that connection with them, you know, whether they're in your building across town or across the country, because they're part of that family that you talked about. Mm-hmm. It just grounds that education, I think, more deeply.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, one thing, like even on my phone right now, like it started off as just an ISTE chat, you know, from the summer, and it's a WhatsApp chat that we have, and we're all in this thread. And of course, just everybody joined. A lot of people are joining, and now a lot of people are joining even after. It's been a while since ISTE was, you know, back this past summer, but now that chat has turned into a way for communication globally, because there are educators from Japan, educators from Korea, educators from the UK, educators here from the United States and everywhere, New Zealand, Australia, and somebody can put in a question and say, hey guys, I'm trying to do this, you know, this particular lesson, this or this. Does anybody want to share anything, or has anybody done anything like this? And all of a sudden you just start seeing the links drop in. And all these amazing resources from different perspectives and different ways. And I'm like, wow, like for a teacher to not have to reinvent the wheel, but take something from maybe this teacher, a little something from this teacher, remix it and make it your own to where it lines up with your standards and the learning and their learning goals, is something that is fantastic. And that is something, that's what I love about the education community.
Yeah, and maybe we could talk about that a little bit, because one of the things that we see a lot of is we get teachers that are overwhelmed in a lot of different ways, because there's so many things that are expected of them. But even for us, like we go in and do trainings and things for school districts, and you can sometimes feel, you know, it's like it's overwhelming, whether it's about AI or whatever it might be. It just can be overwhelming for teachers. And this probably connects to the professional, like the learning networks too, just in the sense that it doesn't make you feel siloed or like you're alone. But if you're thinking about teachers being overwhelmed by things that they're trying to learn, what do you find is the best strategies for overcoming some of that feeling of being overwhelmed or like the fear of trying a new tool, and just helping the teachers to build confidence and see successes early on?
Yeah, for me, it's always been the KISS strategy. Keep it simple and streamlined. I know maybe others have heard that last S as something else, but for me, I've just really adopted that model of keep it simple and streamlined. And all that really means is for any teacher that is out there, whether you're a first-year teacher or whether you're a 30-year vet, it's all about the simplicity. And sometimes we tend to overcomplicate things, which is, I think many times, I want to say in the educator's nature, because we obviously want to do what is best, but sometimes we can be taken by what your neighbor across the hall is doing or what that specific educator is either doing or announcing on, you know, on X or LinkedIn or so on and so forth. And you're like, oh, I want to do that. And I want to, because I see that it works for them and so on. But I want to always, and I always let my teachers know, it's like, you are the experts in your classrooms. You are the learning engineers in your classroom, and you know your audience better than that person does on LinkedIn or that person on Instagram does, and you know what will work for them. And sometimes what happens is you want to fall in line with what everybody else is doing because of that fear of missing out, that you miss out really on your own expertise, because sometimes a lesson doesn't have to be that hard in order for it to resonate with the students, as long as you're prepared and, you know, and as long as you even just use tech tools that you are already familiar with, or even if it's with color pencils or crayons, believe it or not, those lessons will still stick, because at the end of the day, it's all about the lesson delivery, allowing students to have discourse and discussion, and maybe giving them different options as to how to present their content mastery to you. You don't have to have a full tool belt of tools. You can just stick to two tools a year, or maybe even three, and then find that time maybe where there's a little bit of that downtime in between lessons, you know, or chapters and so on, where maybe you can definitely take some of those risks in the sense of using an app that you may not be familiar with yet, but giving it a shot and see what kind of results you get. You know, I tell my teachers too, it's like, hey, just get clicky with it. You know, there's nothing that you can do, nothing that you can break. You can always click back, sign out, sign back in, and you're going to be fine. Don't worry about it. But don't put too much pressure on yourself to make sure that that lesson is perfect, because it will never be perfect. And I've learned that so many times where I think like, man, this lesson is going to hit. It's going to be perfect. I have it prepped. I have all my materials. And then all of a sudden, as you're going through it, as we know, tech happens, like it happened with us, you know, maybe almost a couple of weeks back, tech happens. And then you have to just be able to adapt and have a plan B in place, or to just really openly and be transparent with students and say, hey guys, you know what? This didn't quite work out the way that I thought it would, but we're going to go ahead and revisit, and we're going to do a plan B. And it's okay to not know everything. And it's okay that maybe your lesson didn't go well, but it's all about the resilience and how you're going to take that and learn from it, and then come over, or in other words, overcome that situation and still be able to present that lesson. So don't feel overwhelmed that you don't know 20 tech tools, because you really don't need 20 tech tools to be successful. Maybe just keep it simple, even three tech tools that are maybe your mainstays, and then just start, you know, experimenting with others when the time is allowed, and you feel comfortable with what you're doing after you've practiced it. But that's really what it is. To me, at the end of the day, is the student grasping the content? Are they showing mastery? Maybe through video. Maybe they record on Screencastify and they record a reflection of the story they just read. Or maybe they show you through the whiteboard feature how they solved the math problem. Or maybe they're practicing their speaking skills for our emergent bilingual students, and they record something for you, whether they use Adobe Podcast to put a podcast together of the unit that they just shared, and they're recording their ideas and things of that sort. that's what I used to do in my classroom. Of course, they didn't have Adobe Podcast back then, but it was really Screencastify. They would create slideshows. They would draw. They would, you know, just be very creative. And that's how I would check for mastery, check for understanding, and also check for any misconceptions where now I can revisit and say, okay, maybe I just need to do a quick reteach with the small group, or maybe just do a quick, you know, 3-minute reteach with the whole class just to fix those misconceptions. But it doesn't always have to be tech, tech, tech. It could be that nice balance, giving them a choice. Maybe some students don't want to use the tech that day. Well, maybe they can go ahead and just give you some kind of drawing, or they can write something for you too as well. So it doesn't always have to be tech integration or streamlining with the tech and things of that sort. We want authentic assessment. I want to still hear their voices, and for a teacher to be able to give those opportunities can definitely go a long way.
So does that same principle then apply, to keep it simple and streamlined for professional development? Is that really what you think helps bring effective professional development home and make it lasting, make it stick? Mm-hmm. Or are there some other tried and true methods that you think that are effective for those of us that do lead a lot of professional development sessions, especially?
Yeah, I think when I was still in the classroom and I would be called up to go to a professional development, I know one of the things that I've noticed, and maybe a lot of teachers always say the same thing too, especially when they're bringing somebody in from the outside, which I think to me sometimes doesn't always work. And I'd say like 95% of the time, 100% of the time it doesn't work because they're not invested in your district. They don't know the breakdown. They don't know what's going on and so on. So they come in with an approach, and I'm not saying that it may not be helpful. There's always going to be some gems there that you can take back. But for professional development, for somebody that is coming in or somebody that is already within the district, keeping it simple and streamlined is definitely a way to go, because we have to think of this. And this is where kind of like my marketing and sales background goes, where now my teachers become my customers and I have to sell them on either this tech tool, this methodology, or this framework. So I may not be in the classroom, and maybe I wasn't in the classroom now for a couple of years, and I'm maybe a little disconnected from there, but I need to present this to them in a way that makes it relevant to them. Well, I need to do my research and say, okay, what are my teachers' pain points? What is happening here? What are some of the student pain points? And really, it's just bringing that together, and you're there to help solve a problem that they already have. Sometimes, you know, there'll be trainings that come in to try and solve a problem that isn't there yet. And I'm not saying it won't be useful, but teachers need intent. Just the way that we with our students say, oh, you need to teach with intentionality. Well, I need professional development with intentionality, which means that it's something that I can easily turn around that same day or the next day and be able to use and use it effectively. So what I need to do is I need to, obviously, like I said, keep it simple and streamlined, but really see what problem you're really trying to solve and really highlight that problem. Because if we just kind of like just glance over it and you're just kind of saying, hey, well, I just got to put this and I just got to give it to you, there's no connection there. Teachers are already overwhelmed with what's happening in the classroom, with their lesson plans, with other compliance walkthroughs and so on, that it's just not going to stick. So if you want to make it stick, find those pain points and show them how what you're doing here, whether it's this app, how this framework, or how this training is really going to tie in to those pain points that they're going through and help them overcome that. So that is really what I always try to do and recommend. And it's okay that, you know, sometimes the conversations turn into sometimes they turn into gripe sessions, but in what you're listening, they're just giving you that feedback. And now you can say, oh, well, I'm glad that you mentioned that. Let's see how we can connect that to this. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, I get it. Now this is the issue that I had. But now with this app or this framework and this, now that'll take care of this. But not only will it take care of that, it'll go ahead and take care of this other issue or this other learning objective and so on and so forth. So the more dots we can connect, the better. And I think that that's really the way professional development should go. It's more of a story that you're telling, but they're the protagonists and you're trying to just walk them through that story and help them be the heroes at the end.
So when we talked about the professional side and you know, getting teachers trained up on various concepts or frameworks and things like that, so once they have done that and they're at a point where they feel comfortable implementing something, so if it's a tech tool or whatever it might be, what have you found on now moving into the student side? What is some of the best practices for making sure that as teachers, if you implement it for student use, what's the best way to make sure that the students aren't just consuming the tech and that so when they have a student use a tech tool, it's actually meaningful for them and allows them to create and still keep their own voice as they use these things. And especially with AI, right? Because AI is a creator. It can create a lot of different things just by prompting it. So what in your mind is the best practices for keeping that ability for students to create?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. And that's something that I've thought a lot about often, and especially now with so many platforms that are out there. But for me, it has always been, like I said, like I'm a real keep it simple and streamlined. And for me, ever since I was in the classroom, it was always going to be, you know, something like Screencastify, like Adobe Podcast now, like recently Adobe Podcast, and like Adobe Express or Canva, things of that sort. And one of the things is that I want to kind of make a distinction too, because there are apps that are kind of mainly more for compliance that are sometimes are just, you know, those are tough for a lot of students that they have to get on, and it's like 30 minutes per week per subject that you have to do. But it's really, you're going in there and they're just kind of clicking away. It's like, man, this is boring, because they're just either kind of like really like flashcard based in the sense of they're just giving you math problems and the student is just clicking. Yes, the teacher can check reports and the teacher can say like, hey, you know, we need to do better. You need to master this and master that. But that should kind of give you a little bit of feedback and saying, this is not what the student, this is not engagement. Yeah, or maybe the student is engaged in the practice, but are they actually learning? So for me, any tool that is going to allow the student to record their voice or record themselves or allow them to, through their thought process and their speaking process or, you know, their creative process, be able to prompt something for an image or, you know, something like you're going to create a graphic for me based on this lesson, and they can go into Adobe Express and create a slideshow or create a recording of their voice or voiceover and things of that sort. To me, that is where I see true engagement and where I will see a learning outcome there, because the students have to get their thoughts together. They have to script it. They either write it out, type it out, and they're really essentially just regurgitating the learning that they just did, but putting their own voice to it, their own twist on it. And that to me is where the learning is most powerful. I learned that in the classroom my last couple of years teaching fifth grade, working with emergent bilingual students, where all my students, I would group them and say, okay, you guys, we're working in fours. I need a Google slide presentation. You guys are going to present. I also need a graphic and I need a short podcast. So that was their assignment. My emergent bilingual student, I remember having her, and she was always very shy. She never wanted to record, but she was always in charge of the Google slide presentations. But I tell you what, she may have been shy in speaking in front of the class, but she spoke loudly and clearly through those Google slides that she created, because she was fantastic with putting those together. But as the year went on, at the end of the year, she presented, and everybody was in shock that she never wanted to present. And she finally raised her hand and says, "No, I want to present." And she presented, and the whole class started clapping because they had never heard her speak English, and her English was beautiful. And that's because this was her first year that she started, and she had a twin sister that was in the other pod. The other pod was a worksheet pod, and her English did not improve. So I've seen the power of being able to actually give your students a chance to record their voice, record themselves, and be able to show you and demonstrate that learning. And I think that that's more powerful there when you're getting it from them than just simply putting them on an app for 30 minutes per day for each subject. You know, they're going to be bored. They're just going to be like, no, like, what is this helping me? Like, it's not helping me, because it's not giving them a fix. Like, they're going through it, they miss it. And it's like, okay, well, show me how to do this right. And then turns out that the way that they do it there may not be the way that the state wants you to do it, or that the way the teacher's teaching it. So now that provides more confusion. So there's a distinction there between those apps that are compliance and then those apps that are for creativity. So that's for me, that's my passion, allowing students to really show you what they know, even though it may be incremental, maybe it may be small, but as the year goes by, that is going to get better and better. And you're going to see that your students are going to improve on their speaking, their communication, their creativity, because all of a sudden they're going to be like, whoa, can I just go use this? And I record myself here, and I want to record myself there, and so on. And that is engagement. Now they're having discourse and saying, hey, well, let's do the presentation. You're going to talk about this era. I'm going to talk about this era, and we're going to put it together in a podcast. And then now you share that on the newsletter for your campus, or you share that in a newsletter for parents, and now they've got an authentic audience. I'm like, come on, like, that hits so many boxes there in the learning aspect. And that's something that I'm very passionate about.
So I'm wondering, is there a lesson here or a takeaway that, you know, a principal or a district administrator could take away from this? You know, like, and I'm sure they have, you know, reports that they have to give that show that compliance data that mm-hmm. you're talking about. But yet, is that really what's going to empower students to share their voice, to mm-hmm. really display, you know, for everyone the massive amount of learning mm-hmm. that has taken place in that student's, you know, progression here? It, you know, like, so what should those district leaders really be focused on? And is there a way for them to support the teachers that are doing such great things? You know, and I'm not saying, you know, maybe make them a model, or, you know, like, what, I guess, I don't know where my question is going here, but, you know, support teachers, but still align with the compliance things that they need to make sure are being taken care of.
Yeah. I think that's a great question. And I think if I'm understanding this, and maybe through an example, maybe I'm not understanding it, but I still share. But I think what helped me, and I know what can help many teachers, is using apps, like I mentioned before, where a student has to produce something. Regardless of what their score looks like, let's say on those compliance apps, but then all of a sudden you've got this beautiful digital portfolio where a student is showing you their speaking, their understanding, their communication skills, and that they truly have mastered the content. One of the things that I always loved is, it was kind of my, I call it my CYB, which was cover your butt, in the sense of when I used to allow students to do these projects, what would happen is if we had a 504 meeting, an IEP meeting, if we had any kind of meeting for the alphabet soups that are out there, I would show up. And what I noticed is there would be a lot of teachers or in the team that would always just show up and show up with documents. And they'd be like, well, here, like, they're getting 70s on this test. They're getting 60s on this test. Well, what can the student do? Well, they just need to study. They need to retake this. They need to come into tutoring. And then I would show up and I'd open up my Chromebook and I'd say, well, that same student in my class has a 90, a 95. And look at their speaking. They're an emergent bilingual. Look at the level of where they're at the beginning. Look at the level where they're at now, because I'm showing them these learning artifacts. And so those coordinators are like, wow, the student is doing this? I was like, yes. And they're like, but their language, and look at the developmental language here. Look at how they're acquiring the language here. Look at how they're communicating, or look at how they're understanding the content. I said, yes, it's the same content, just presented differently. So for me, I always would say that those learning artifacts are your evidence that your student, although maybe they may not be as engaged on this 30 minutes of compliance, and maybe in those 30 minutes they only do 5 problems, and out of those 5 problems, you know, they only get 3 right, doesn't mean that they don't know the content. It's just that for them, this is boring and not engaging and really, you know, bringing the best out of them. But then if you present it in a different way, where now you have to create something for me and I want to hear your voice and I want you to amplify your learning, then that takes it to that next level. And again, the evidence is going to be that portfolio that the teacher can present to the principal to say, hey, you know, and maybe just even thoughts of, do we need to be spending money on this platform if the students are not engaged enough? You know, and that's the thing too, is that data is so important. And sometimes we get stuck in the, this is the way we've always done it, and this is what the students need to do, but the results never change. So that's like, a tough part.
Yeah. Like, so they've collected historical data the same way over time. And if you change the way you're collecting the data, they can't compare it to what happened before.
Right.
Is that kind of a trap that they're afraid of falling into, perhaps, and why, and maybe why they're not promoting for, you know, multiple ways to collect evidence of student learning, which is really what you're talking
about. Yeah. And I think that that falls in line. I mean, it's just, the thing is that sometimes we don't have a choice, because this is what comes from our service center or central office at that point. But one of the things that I do want to add is many times the correct stakeholders are not at those meetings when these decisions are made. And what I mean by that is that teachers are not involved in these decisions, and maybe even getting students involved in these decisions, because many times it's the people that have been far removed, very, very far removed, are the ones that make the decision, thinking, well, I just need something that's gonna, you know, fill in this compliance piece. Well, this is the app and this is what I'm gonna get. And that's, everybody does it. And it shouldn't work that way. And I get it that sometimes those decisions need to be made, and they need to be made in that way. But can we change our thought process? And again, this kind of takes me back to that business side. I mean, I'm not going to buy something that I know hasn't been working and still continue to use it. Like, it's okay to say, you know what, I messed up. Maybe this wasn't the app for us. And yes, you know, we spent this much money. But you know what, like, in doing our research and bringing in teacher end users and student end users into the conversation, now we can say that, yes, this particular app now that we want to use is the one that, you know, will be, give us better results and things of that sort. Or just say, you know what, based on our research too, we don't need this at all whatsoever. So it's tough. And I know it's tough for them to be out there. And I'm only speaking for myself, because my mind thinks a little bit different than what, you know, and I always say this, coming in and having that business experience, sometimes I feel like real outside the box. And sometimes I feel like I'm like the black sheep, because I think differently, because I've seen different, as opposed to the way that this is the way we've always done it. And I kind of challenge things a bit, but I say, well, if we're not challenging and if we're not bringing in new ideas, you know, we're going to be in a rut and we're going to get the same results all the time. So yeah, it's tough for them. It's tough to be at the top, but please, my best advice for administrators. And I know there was a question here, something that administrators can do, even at the district level, bring in all your stakeholders. At the school level, bring in all your stakeholders when you're making decisions, because we can make the decision that we think is right, but in the long run, is it going to be the right decision for all?
And I like too how the thing is, we're taking into account what the actual makeup of the district is and their experiences that are happening during the school day. And part of that piece is the technology that's being used and different types of technology. And one of the difficulties, because it's not all positive, right? There are some things that do happen on the negative side as well, where they have to balance, you have to balance tech use. And so one of the things that's important to look at is the personal relationships that you still have to maintain during that tech use. And I'm sure we've all heard of, like, where, you know, tech as a babysitter, right? Or, you know, now there's data out too, where we have with the AI stuff, where kids would rather talk to a chatbot in some cases, as opposed to engaging with other individual students at their district. And that's a downside of that. What is your thoughts on how to maintain connections in the tech rich environments that we have? Because there's so many positives, but there's also these negatives that exist too.
Yeah, I think it's what can be done is sometimes it's just as educators, we can overdo things. We can overdo the tech. Now, again, it goes back to maybe the situation that may be happening, whether it's at that campus, at that district, and so on and so forth, where there's so much that as soon as you open that door comes in, which I mean the administrative stuff, and it is overwhelming. That for teachers, it's like, you know what, just get on this app, and the app has a chatbot. You work with that while I need to catch up on these IEP reports, or they're demanding this report or that report, and so on. So it could be very easy for a teacher to say, well, I need to do my compliance over here that they want, and they want this report immediately. So now it's like, okay, well, we've got this app that has this chatbot that'll go ahead and walk the students through that lesson. And then that could easily turn into like, oh, okay, I'll just turn on Nearpod. Go ahead, guys, just log in, do the lesson. And I just kind of hang back and I just reinforce what we're doing, but it already taught the lesson. Sometimes I battle with that because there are so many wonderful apps, but it does not have that connection piece to the student. These chatbots have no context of who your student is at all whatsoever. They see that they get the question wrong and say, well, nope, that's not right. Okay, well, show me what I need to do. Well, try and do this, 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 and that. And then you may be able to try it again, and maybe it doesn't work, it doesn't fail. Some students may not learn that way. Some students were like, well, maybe they can roll with it. But that human piece where the teacher knows, just visibly looking at a student, when a student understands something, when a student doesn't understand something, on how to not single a student out. And maybe as they're working, teacher walks by and says, hey, you're doing a good job. Is there anything that I can help you with? Things of that sort. You know, I think that that is something that can never, ever be replaced. And it shouldn't be replaced, because we need that human connection. Now, also because sometimes we tend to overuse apps. And again, there are many teachers out there. And again, not all do this, but sometimes the ones that do make it difficult. And maybe there's this perception that everybody does it, where they just say, hey, here you go, just get on IXL. And that's it. Like, IXL is going to teach you for today. Here are the lessons. Here's 10 lessons that I'm going to give you for today. Just get on IXL and that's it. I mean, yeah, there's your 2-hour learning, but it's not helping the student. Is they're just doing it, but are they really learning it? And how are you assessing the learning? So to me, it's very important that you find that balance where you allow students to have discourse in your class. Also, you need to allow students to have processing time. I am one of those that right now, thanks to you sending me the questions ahead of time, you know, have answers already like in my mind of where this could go. But if we were just doing this, you know, kind of like, hey, let's just get on and talk, my processing time, I would be pausing a lot because I need to process my answers. And sometimes, although I may not be the first to answer, it doesn't mean that I don't have the right answer. It just takes me a little bit longer to process. And I understand that sometimes curriculums are like, go, 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 we got to move. And then what ends up happening is the first two rows of students understand the content because they're the ones that raise their hand real quick and they're always able to answer. But what happens to the second two rows? You know, like, are those students not worthy enough for you to wait a little bit to process, to be able to answer? And then what happens is that they will no longer raise their hands and they just kind of sit back and slowly just kind of fade into the class. We need to, for me, best practice is always allowing students to talk, to be able to think, pair, share. And it doesn't have to be like they have to talk for 30 minutes. It's like, hey, here's 1 minute, you know, tell me the difference between an animal cell and a plant cell. Go ahead and discuss. They discuss, they do their facts, and then you assess and check. It's like, hey, all right, Fonz, what did you learn from Johnny over here or from Jeremy? What did he say was an animal plant has that, you know, a plant cell doesn't, or excuse me, an animal cell and a plant cell doesn't. And you're able to build that up. Students are listening. They're engaged. You know, you still have control of the classroom, but everybody is participating. And I think to me, that's something that's very important because I'm just going to go back to the chatbot. The chatbot has no context of your background, where you're coming from, who you are at all whatsoever. It's going to give you answers. It's going to guide you, but it's going to guide you in a very sterile way, as opposed to in a very engaging, meaningful, caring way, I think. And so those are the things that I'm kind of seeing and that I kind of battle with because the technology is there. Is it useful? Yeah, I'm not saying that it's not useful and that it won't be useful, but there's just something about discourse, like all three of us right now having this conversation. I'm learning so much from both of you, and I hope you're learning something from me too as well that we can take away. And it was personal. It was me. It was for me because I get to be your guest. I get to learn from both of you for this hour, 45 minutes. And that's the way that I see it. I'm getting this professional development with two great gentlemen that I get to learn about me and learn about you. So to me, that's very important.
Well, we appreciate that. it's always reaffirming to be able to bring on guests such as yourself to, you know, I think expand our knowledge. That's one of the things that I feel like in doing this podcast with David over the last couple of years is that I really feel that I've been able to grow in my thinking and my own learning. And I hope then that leads me to the point where I'm better able to share that with others as well. And I think that wouldn't be possible without some of those human connections that you talked about. But I think at the same time, without some of the technologies that also allow that to happen. Like you had said, you know, like there are certain students that have figured out the game of school, right? And they know when the teacher asks the questions that they're going to raise their hand, then the teacher's going to think that they know it all and they're going to get the best grades and, you know, that sort of thing. But then, like you had said, that's not really helping those students who just need a little bit more time to process, right? And that maybe technology can help us give those students some time to be able to still show what they know, make sure their voice is heard and demonstrate that learning that took place. So that it leads me into my next question here then. It's a little bit more technology focused, and you know, we have a technology and education podcast. You have a technology and education podcast here. What do you see as emerging maybe trends, maybe tools in the world of education technology that you think could be applied to situations kind of like this? Is it AI still? And I know we've kind of we've danced around AI. We've not really hammered on it. You know, is it mm-hmm. things that AI will allow? Is it other, you know, AR, VR, or XR opportunities, or are there different avenues we should be exploring?
Yeah. Well, for the most part, due to different states doing different things as far as like cell phone bans and things of that sort. I would have normally said like AR, VR, because I know like when I was teaching fifth grade, and mind you, this was back in my last year in the classroom was like 2016, 17. We were a BYOD district. So students were bringing in their devices and we were doing AR, VR heavy, you know, and I know Chromebooks now, you know, they do have certain capacity of that. But I do want to say that this immersive technology should be coming back to some extent. You've got some apps like Megamind that are out there, you know, where the students can at least kind of immerse themselves in a gamified way and still be able to learn. So I think that that kind of technology, I know AI is, it's here, it's going to stay there. There's no way, like, I mean, it's here and it's only going to get better. And I know that for myself, I've always been a very cautious advocate. I've always advocated for at least for the teacher side of it. You know, sometimes on the student side, I'm still like, you know, you have to be very cautious on that. There's a lot of regulations, a lot of things there. But on the teacher's aspect, you know, the fact that you've got tools like DFIT, you know, that can change, you know, your reading levels for students that come in. They've got, you know, so many great resources there that can help a teacher immediately adjust a lesson for a student that may come in that day or a student that may have come in, you know, a week ago or from the beginning of the school year. Those types of tools, I know that will continue to grow, but we also need to focus on the tools that are simple. You know, like I mentioned, a couple, and but I'm not sponsored by any of these at all, but tools that are easy, like, you know, for to listen to students, you know, tools like Screencastify, Adobe Podcast. I really like those a lot. You know, those kinds of tools where you can get student feedback and they're able to create something for you, Adobe Express, Canva, where they can get creative graphically for you and things of that sort. Those tools to me that will always be there to enhance that creativity, not just really create for the student, but to really enhance their knowledge, their learning, and so on. So, I mean, but I do see that some of that immersive tools that like Megaminds will come in, and I love them by the way, just the fact that student can go in and it's kind of like a little adventure depending on what the teacher creates, and they go in, they can listen to a YouTube video, they can watch a slideshow, and they can go through this wonderful world that is built for them for that setting. And I think that's something that's great that Eric Tao is doing wonderfully. And I think that that should be something that we need to look into also, and just continue to gamify the learning process too, as well, in an intentional way, not just simply substitute and say, hey, here's your learning for today. Here's your Wayground quiz, and just keep working on that until you get, you know, proficient or you get master's. You know, so those are some of the things that we need to be very cautious with, because those tools can easily invade the student learning process and invade the teaching process. And there has to be that balance. But for me, I think it's just really, it's going to be that AI, and it's going to get better for the teachers for sure.
Great. Well, thanks for all your insights on all these questions and everything. We're going to move into the lightning round. This is kind of our quick hit round. So, you know, like one word or sentence to kind of encompass answers to these questions. I'm going to start us off, and we're just going to rapid fire through these. Jeremy and I will alternate, but what's your favorite place in Texas?
Favorite place in Texas, it has to be here, South Texas, the Rio Grande Valley. I mean, if you guys ever come down here, you will see the hospitality, great food, great places, great culture, just because we're right along the border. So I wouldn't trade this place for anything else.
So you've mentioned you've had 330 some episodes. Yes. What's been a guest that has surprised you the most, or maybe like help you learn something that really stuck with you that is kind of carried with you through the last few years?
Yeah, that would be Kevin Doherty. He's also got a podcast called Just Thinking, and he's fantastic. He is so knowledgeable and has such an amazing heart. So two things that I learned from him when he was on my episode. Number one is and I've known Kevin since 2008, 18, and that's kind of like when it stuck. But when he was on the show, it kind of brought it back, is the learning engineer part. You know, I know for teachers, it's like, oh, I'm just a teacher, teacher. No. It's like, you're a learning engineer. You are in charge of creating this wonderful learning experience for your students. And I think that phrase, there's so much power to it. Then sometimes, you know, you hear the word teacher, or maybe even a teacher says, well, I heard that recently at a conference. Saying, well, no, I'm just a teacher. I was like, no, you're not just a teacher. I was like, you're a learning engineer. And it was interesting just to see their face kind of like light up, like, oh, like, and I was like, yeah, because you're in charge of creating those learning experiences. So he really brought that, and it has stuck with me. And I always reference that. The second thing that he referenced, and he wrote it, I think, in a blog post, was the, it's okay to not know everything. So for my new teachers that are out there, or new instructional coaches, or new assessment coordinators, new superintendents, wherever it is that you may land, if you're in a new role, it's okay to not know everything. And it doesn't matter if you have 1 year experience or 20 years of experience, it's okay to not know everything.
All right. What's your go-to hype song?
Go-to hype song. Oh my gosh. This one, I know it sounds cheesy, but this reminds me of when I was 8 years old and I had a little Casio Walkman, and this was the very first cassette soundtrack. I'm dating myself. Cassette soundtrack that I bought is the Rocky IV soundtrack. And it is Eye of the Tiger, of course. That is my go-to song since I was 8. Like, there's just something about that song that just pumps me up.
Nice.
Did you ever use the pencil to rewind?
Yes. Yes. Been there, done that.
Yep.
But man, I tell you, man, that little Casio, I felt like king of the world because it had like little 3 EQ knobs on it. And I was just like, man, this, and I used to wear like a little fanny pack. So I would have it in my fanny pack when we would travel. But man, I thought I was hip.
Much information with that. If you could instantly master one new tech tool or platform, what would it be?
I would probably say that would be Adobe Illustrator. One of the things that I love, that I love working with Photoshop, but there's just something about being very creative with Adobe Illustrator that I really wish I could master, that to really just create more logos, more designs and things of that sort. So right now that's kind of like in the process of me just kind of learning some of the basics, but just a little something extra to learn to kind of get me out of my regular space and kind of challenge me in those ways. So yeah, Adobe Illustrator would be one for sure.
Cool. Good. Just out of curiosity, have you ever chatted with Manuel Herrera at all?
Yeah, he's been on my podcast.
Okay. Yeah, he's great. We had him on too. And so that just made me think of that because he brought up like the illustration stuff. So, okay. So what's one thing about you, your students or colleagues would be surprised to learn?
Surprised probably that I love to build Legos with my wife. So it's a great way for me to just kind of, again, unplug and disconnect and just be present. You know, it's a great time for both of us to work together on a project and just talk and share, and you know, you're just building together, and it's just, you know, really nice memories of doing that. So we try and do that as often as we can, and which is great because then I get to buy more Legos, and so we get to just build together. And now, like, I've got a lot of Legos now because we definitely do a lot of building. But that's her thing, you know, just having that quiet time, peaceful build, and just be present with one another.
Okay. And finally, what's a guest you would like to have on your podcast next that you haven't had before?
Ooh, okay. So this one for sure, I've been trying for like a year, but I know that she's been very busy because she just had a book tour and everything like that. But it would be Dr. Emily M. Bender. You know, she's huge on LinkedIn, and I just want to have her on to just hear her perspectives on AI, as I know she's really kind of more on the anti side of things, but just to really just, you know, question and say, like, where did this thought process come from? How are you seeing things now? And especially us as educators, you know, we are really diving in to these tools, but are there things that we haven't considered? Mm-hmm. Are there things that are, I mean, we see a lot of upside to it, but what might be some of those things that, you know, she may say, well, you know, just really think about those things. So just have her on, hear her perspective, and, you know, just, yeah, I don't know, just pick her brain. Like, that's somebody that I've been following for a while now, and kind of subtly hint. I did reach out to her once and she was busy. She's like, well, we're going to be doing our book tour and everything. So I know she's been busy, but hopefully one day I'll have her on, or maybe you guys will have her on before. And that'd be great too, because I would love to listen to that show too.
Well, I think you just gave her the perfect pitch to come onto your show.
So. That should be a clip that you guys cut and put it on LinkedIn and tag her.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Well, Fonz, finally, where can people reach out to you or connect? Do you have anything coming up? I know we talked about you'll be at TCEA. And then maybe lastly, too, is there any EdTech Life episodes that are coming up that we can look forward to?
Yeah, absolutely. You can always find me at myedtech.life, myedtech.life, where you can check out our 339 episodes after today. You know, we'll be releasing one with Marissa Sadler Holder today, and she is fantastic. She's on LinkedIn. She has a wonderful heart and just a great passion for education and helping educators continue to succeed and continue to grow. So that'll be the most recent episode. And you can find me on all socials at My EdTech Life. I will also be at TCEA this year from January 30th to February the 2nd, I believe. And I am a featured speaker there. So come and check out some of those sessions where we'll be talking about podcasting, we'll be talking about creativity, you know, and things of that sort. And just be there and stop by, say hi. And I mean, like I said, I always love to connect, but that's where I'm at. That's where you can find me. And don't hesitate to ever reach out and DM for any questions, or if you have any help or need any help or anything, let me know. Like, I'm always readily available to help you in any way, shape, or form. And that's all about, that's what the Professional Learning Network is all about.
Sounds good. And we'll be sure to include the links and things to reach out to you in the show description and make sure that viewers can get access to that. So Fonz, thanks again for joining us. We really appreciate it. And
hope thanks,
the best for the rest of your year.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much for the invite.
Thanks for listening to Integrate This. Want to take your learning further? Head over to our YouTube channel for quick tutorials, deep dives, and more EdTech tips you can use right away. Don't forget to subscribe and catch new podcast episodes every Thursday on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, keep exploring, keep innovating, and keep integrating this.